Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 We're at the top of 10, no? We didn't do that first one. Means top of page 10, so 12 and 15 verses, no? Okay. Maharaj Parikit is to die in 1 week. After assuring him that a short life with a moment of pure consciousness is superior to a long life wasted within matter, Sukadev encourages Parikit Maharaj by reminding him of saintly King Katvanga. After being informed that he had only a moment left to live, Katvanga at once freed himself from all material activities, and in a moment took shelter of the Lord. Sukadev concludes that Parikit's remaining time of 7 days is sufficient for perfection. At the last stage of life, one should fearlessly cut off all attachment to all connection to one's body. So it's the quality of the life. One time when Vyasadeva's father, Parasara Muni, was young, then he was 9 years old at the time. He came to visit. There was an assembly of sages where Markandeya Rishi was speaking. And Markandeya is the oldest. He's right back from the very beginning of creation. And he was sitting on the Vyasasan and speaking to all this great assembly of sages. So when Pradasara walked in from the box, kickbox. What do you mean? You're not married. Why are you wearing it? He walked in from the back, and Markandeya stood up. So nobody could see who it had come, but if Markandeya stands up, then that means it's Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Narad Muni, Four Kumara, someone like that. You know, otherwise, Markandeya doesn't have to stand up for anybody. He's the eldest of all. So then they all turn around, you know, probably expecting somebody, and then it's kind of like, you know, and there's, oh, here's this 9-year-old kid. So then Markandeya asked Parasa to sit on the asan and give the class, you know, give speak. But he says, no, you're the senior most. I'm just a kid in this assembly. He says, in my unlimited years being alive, I have not been as conscious as you have been in your 9 years. Therefore, technically, you're older than me. Because spiritual life is more important than material. So you're spiritually older, and this is a spiritual assembly, so therefore you're the eldest here. So that's here at this point that Sukadeva is making, that it's not how old you are, but it's how many moments that you're conscious, how conscious you are. That's the thing. Simply age, it is a bona fide element of respect. But it's the last of the five, right? More important than that will be wealth, social relations, influence, knowledge. These are all more important than age. But age is a consideration. If someone's elder, then always respect is due. But the most important, though, is knowledge. And of knowledge, then realization. And of that, God consciousness, right? So that's the most important that he's trying to point out. So therefore, one doesn't have to worry that, you know, about that one is not prepared, because it's the consciousness. Then you have the element of, just to prove that, Katvanga Maharaj became perfect in 1 moment. And 1 moment is described as 1/11th of a second. I mean, that's the definition. So then, in this moment, he became perfect, so then surely Parikit Maharaj, he's got a week. You know, so should be no problem at all. So he's giving him that encouragement. Right? Then we see again that here perfection means that you get out of the material world. Whether you develop love for Krishna fully, that's another thing. But leaving here, one goes to Gokul, and in Gokul is where one perfects that love. Does that make sense? Prabhupada mentions that it's very rare anyone goes directly from here to Goloka. Right? You can only get into Goloka if you've attained the platform of prema. Right? So that means before you leave the body on the platform of bhava, if you've already attained prema, then you can go directly there. And if not, then you will go into the pastimes manifest here, and in that platform of Brahma Bhuta, then you'll develop that love for Krishna, and you'll generally, they leave their body in that path, in that state. Does that make sense? I mean, because generally they make the point is you keep coming and going out of the pastimes, and you know, you do nice here, and you know, so why don't you just stay? Why do you keep going back? Understand? So then you just remain. So instead of in your meditation going and coming back again, you just stay there. So on this side, people think you died, but all it is you just didn't come back. Right? Does that make sense? But some who will go through it, you know, then they attain prema there and they remain, and then from here they directly go. But in any case, the platform of perfection is gone through, right? Because it uses the term perfection. It's sufficient for perfection. Perfection means Brahma Bhuta. You're liberated from the material world and you're situated in spiritual consciousness. Does that make sense? That's why you see sometimes it's perfection, sometimes love of God. They're different. Right? Means perfection means, for us, it's, why it's called perfection is you're perfectly free from the material world and perfectly and situated in the spiritual platform. Right? Does that make sense? So it's called perfection. But for us, because we think perfection, for us, perfection is prema, but this is not necessarily referring to that. Right? Does that make sense? That's also part of our, if you understand that, then your definitions of devotees, then we understand is, you know, someone's attained perfection means he, you know, like Dhritarashtra attained perfection, means he was liberated. Doesn't mean he went back to Godhead. Does that make sense? Because he wasn't a devotee. Devotees, a perfection means Brahma Bhuta. Non-devotees, perfection means mukti or liberation. Right? It's different. Then here we see again, he says, one should fearlessly cut off all attachment to all connection to one's body. So here again, fearless is coming up. So fearless means you're not afraid of that I'm servant of Krishna. And you're willing to take that position up with great enthusiasm. Right? Because otherwise, all these other identities are there. My body, my family, my wife, my children, my house, my money, my job, right? My prestige. So all those will keep one back. So that means all those are cutting into your identity as I am eternal servant of Krishna. Does that make sense? You can't have I am an eternal servant of Krishna and that's 100% and at the same time, you know, this is my wife, this is my children, this is my money, this is my this is, understand? It doesn't go together. Does that make sense? You know, if you have 100%, it's given one place, it can't be the other. And if it's in the other place, it can't be here. So that means whatever is the identity that is there with those things, that much less is the Krishna consciousness. Right? So if you're 30% attached, that you're 70% Krishna conscious, but still it's 70, not 100. Right? And Krishna makes the point is that you have to think of Him alone, not something else. Does that make sense? So the endeavor is to get that 100%. So that's why it's saying at the time of death, you can't do anything about it anyway. So you might as well use it to advantage at this point to cut off everything, then you make it 100%. Does that make sense? Yes? No? Yes.
Grihastha was thinking, because of my wife and my children, and they belong to Krishna, and they're devoted to Krishna, and really actually seeing them as such, not out of attachment. Would they be able to achieve that 100%?
Because this is my wife, you used.
Not what?
Means this is Krishna's devotee. They're all devotees. And so, you know, we've gotten so much nice benefit from their association. They've helped so much, and they've given us opportunities to help them and progress and all that. And but now it's, you know, time to, you know, go our separate ways. That's a different perspective, because there's no sense of ownership. Because if there's any sense of ownership here, then, you know, one has to. It means being an owner. If it's just like, let's say you have a house somewhere in, you know, Europe, you know, let's say, you know, on the beach at the Monte Carlo or something like that. But you've never been there, you've never seen it, you've never gone there. Can you really say you own the house? Right? So that's the point, is that if I say I own the house means I have to do something that shows that. So ownership means is there, but that ownership has to be transferred over to Krishna, not here. Because wife is the gross and subtle body, it's not the soul. The soul is not the wife, technically. The soul thinks they're the wife or thinks they're the husband, therefore it manifests like that. Prabhupada said, it's the soul that's the doctor, not the body. The body is just a body, but because the soul identifies as a doctor, it endeavors and acts that way. Like that. So we'll say the body, but what you're identifying with, the person has married the body, gross and subtle. He's not married the soul. Like that. Does that make sense? So therefore, even to say this is my wife, then it has its limitations. But if one has that mentality in practicing Krishna consciousness, that's beneficial, right? Because from that you can come to the state where one can just appreciate the association of those devotees and move on. You know, it's like you've been in the temple, it's been nice in the temple, and all the devotees have been nice, and it's been a great time, but now you're leaving and going somewhere else. You know what I'm saying? It's something that happens, so it's the same principle.
Have there some guys that you, get on really well with and really enjoy serving Krishna? Like, is it okay to have that attachment and say, I'd like to be a friend to you?
That's there. That's, anyway, is that the devotees that you are generally you serve with and are like that, those are the ones, they will be there in that assembly in the spiritual realm. So that's not a problem. That means the relationship with the devotees is eternal, but the specific relationship of here, who's husband, who's wife, who's this, who's that, you know, that doesn't fly. Vaikuntha, yes. Husband and wife here, go there as husband and wife. Like that. Heavenly planets, yes, it works like that. But the spiritual world, no. It means Vrindavan, no, because it's slightly different. There it's, you know, Vishnu is God and his wife is Lakshmi, and then all the devotees, they have their husbands and wives and like that. But in Vrindavan, it's, you know, Krishna is the everything. So it's slightly, it's a different scene, you know. Okay. She has something to say. Yes? No? No, I'm just saying you're... Oh, okay. Okay. Anything else? Okay. Next. Turning to the topic of practice, he says that one should leave home and perform yoga to fix the memory upon the transcendental syllable A-U-M, Nimishatu. In his purport to verse 17, Srila Prabhupada describes Om as a note of addressing the Lord. His divine grace recommends the chanting of Om Hari Om, which means O my Lord, the personality of Godhead. The yogi should withdraw his mind from sense activities and fix it in the Lord's service. The yogi is to engage his mind by meditation on the Lord's limbs, thus systematically remembering his complete spiritual form. Yoga therefore means to focus the mind upon Lord Vishnu. Such meditation cleanses the mind of its lower tendencies. By focusing his full attention upon the Lord, the yogi can very soon attain devotional service under his direct shelter. So here, yeah, so now, there you mentioned that the perfection is to absorb yourself in the Lord and to cut off attachment to everything in the material world. So then here he's saying in that practice is that then in that at some point one should leave the home. Right? So this leaving the home can take, you know, a few forms. One is that the home is left and, you know, that's all. Two, one husband and wife, they can leave the home, like Dhritarashtra is Vanaprastas. Or you have the element that, you know, before that, while within the home, one, the focus, the center is not the home, the center is Krishna. You know? And the home is just part of one's duties and one's, service. Does that make sense? Because as long as the home becomes the center, then that means Krishna's not. Does that make sense? It's a simple calculation. Problem is some of these formulas are so simple we don't want to acknowledge them. You know? Like that. You know, like how you say? The emperor has no clothes. It's pretty simple. But, you know, nobody wants to acknowledge it, because then that there's so many complications in that. Does that make sense? Okay. So here he's saying that one fixes it on the holy name of the Lord, then on his form and his different limbs till you get the complete body, then naturally the qualities, the pastimes, these will naturally follow. So by absorbing oneself, in other words, we see there's the endeavor to detach oneself from the material energy and engage in spiritual activities. Then one is chanting the holy name and trying to fix one's consciousness on the Lord. Right? Okay? Means that's the essence. And here we see, you know, technically just what's going on. Does that make any sense? Any questions on this? Yes.
How is one supposed to meditate on the form of the Lord?
How does one meditate? I mean, whether Padmasan is Swastik or Shukasan or... It's never imagined. It has to be according to the Shastra, Guru Sadhu and Shastras. So it would be, means it could be a, you know, from a picture or something that strikes one, and that can be. Otherwise, then the deity is the natural. Deities work really well. That's why the Lord comes in that form, because then you have a complete form to think of, and that works really nice. You know, so that's generally what they do. But you know, if other sources become, how do you say, one's inspiration, that's not a problem. You know, but deities, you know, you have the right mood and everything like that. Right? Okay. Because otherwise, you have like there's one. We have one deity. It's not exactly according to the Shastra. We have, they've taken Krishna dancing on the head of Kaliya, but taking him off the head of Kaliya, and then because he's so overly bent, because that's a Tandava dance, right? Tandava, Shiva does the Tandava dance when he destroys the universe. Tandava is for destruction. So, because Krishna is chastising, you know, Kaliya, he uses the Tandava dance. You know, that's much more, because you're stamping. You destroy things by stamping, not by pirouettes and all those kind of things, you know. So it's a much harder, heavier method. So he's using that. So they take that form of Krishna dancing and then put him with Radharani. So that kind of stuff is speculation. That's not in the scriptures. You do have Krishna like that, like you see him on the Akshman spoons, because you have the thing, he'll be there dancing, and, you know, the tail will go up, he'll put his hand there. You know, but that's why his hand's like that, because it's on the tail. You know, and his feet are like that, because he's stomping on the heads. But what does his hand like that got to do with Radharani? He doesn't do a ton of a dance with Radharani. Right? And then she's already in threefold bending form. Like here, our Radharani is in threefold bending form. She's bent in three ways. But it's subtle, because girls are subtle. They're not gross. But because Krishna is so bent, then they tend to take Radharani, and all those movements exaggerate it so much that it doesn't really make any sense. Right? So that kind of stuff you have to avoid. So if it doesn't work, then stick with the deity, because you know that's right. You know, like that. Or authorized paintings, or, you know, like that. That's nice. Okay? Anything else? No? Okay, so the thing is that that meditation where one is pulling one's consciousness out of the material energy, fixing it through the holy name on the Lord, that meditation then frees one or cleanses one of the lower tendencies. Right? That's the whole process. The whole Pancharatrik and Vedic process is to cleanse us of attachments to the material world, our sinful tendencies, right? Like that, by regulation, right? And by engaging in a higher fashion. Yeah? So, yeah, like that. Then one can very quickly take up devotional service. Yeah? Next, Purkit Mars expresses his desire to know in full detail how the contaminations of the mind may be gotten rid of. Replying, Sukadeva Goswami outlines the practices of Astanga Yoga. He says that the yogi should gain control over the mind by intelligence. In this way, he should apply the mind to the gross potencies displayed by the Virat Rup, universal form. In that manifestation, absolute time, past, present, future, is experienced. Nimisha 3. In his purport to Bhagavatam 3.10.11, Srila Prabhupada writes, "Metaphysically, time is distinguished as absolute and real. Absolute time is continuous and is unaffected by the speed or slowness of material things. Time is astronomically and mathematically calculated in relation to the speed, change and life of a particular object. Factually, however, time has nothing to do with the relativities of things. Rather, everything is shaped and calculated in terms of the facility offered by times. Time is the basic measurement of the activity of our senses, by which we calculate past, present, future. But in factual calculation, time is no beginning and no end." Sukadev next describes as... So the mind will be controlled by the intelligence. The mind, if it's not controlled by intelligence, will go out of control. Because the mind, it accepts and rejects. So it means you could be accepting and rejecting all day. And what you would accept, what you would reject, would not necessarily have any logical, seeming logical, method. Right? Just you like. But why you like at this moment changes. You like somebody, they smiled at you. Next day they don't smile at you. You don't like them. You know, you like this food, but now you've eaten it for 3 days, you don't like this food. You know, it just doesn't make any... In other words, I perceive will give me a good result, I like. And what I perceive hasn't given or may not give a good result, I don't like. Right? But that changes by experience. Right? Does that make sense? And that experience is then based on my identity and stuff like that. So it's always moving. So one can never, ever be satisfied. So to avoid that, then there are standards that are set, logical standards that are set, and then the mind has to accept the concept that I'm going to follow a standard. Then once it agrees to follow standards, then the intelligence is used to identify how that standard applies in your life and what are actually your options to choose from, rather than just you have unlimited options because of a standard, the options are more limited. But that's better. If you think about it, you may think, oh, well, that's not good. Let us say you're buying something, right? Right? You go into a shop, there's 2,000 saris. That's a problem. You know? And then once you've got it whittled down to you have two or three, that's easier. Right? And what do you use? You use standards. No, I don't wear, you know, Marwari saris, or I don't wear this color, or I don't wear that, or I don't wear this design, or I don't use jari, or I do use jari. You know what I'm saying? Then you can take few thousand saris that are there and whittle it down. And then within that, then you can choose. Does that make sense? So the point is the mind does like being controlled and does like a field to work in, because then it's very clear, you can focus. If there's no focus, the mind doesn't know what to do. And when you don't know, indecision, one cannot be happy. Right? It's just like the person likes you or doesn't like you, you would rather know, isn't it? Than to not know at all. Indecision, the unknown, is more of a problem. But if you know this person doesn't like me, then it's easy. I can just very cleanly not like them back. You know, there's no anxiety about it. You know, or I can say, no, I'm forgiving, moving on, and like that. But it's very clear what you can do. But if it's done, you can't act. So therefore, ignorance comes in. Therefore, depression. Therefore, right? Does that make some sense? So this idea is actually the mind wants that, because it's in the mode of goodness. The mind comes from goodness. It wants a formula, right? Because mode of goodness means regulation. So when things are regulated, the mind is actually very happy, right? Does that make sense? But it's supposed to be regulated in a way that's natural for that particular kind of mind. Does that make sense? Kids are regulated in one way, adults in another, because the state of mind is different. Does that make sense? So according to the state of mind, there must be regulation. Does that make sense? So once the mind has accepted that, then you can take up, you know, what Krishna consciousness presents as standards, and then we can apply ourselves and follow them. And it becomes very nice. Becomes no problem at all. Does that make sense? Yeah. Then he brings about, so now, in doing this, then one's going to apply it to the Virat Roop. In other words, what's important to you, if it's not directly Krishna conscious, then you connect it to Krishna through the universal form. Right? You're attached to the deity, you're attached to the holy name, no problem. You don't have to use the universal form here. But if you're attached to your table, you're attached to your rug, you're attached to your, you know, toothbrush, then you have to use the universal form here to connect it. Does that make sense? Like that. So then in doing that, then he's mentioning about time. Then absolute time means it's not gauged by what goes on here. Here, this past, present, future is connected with the senses, but it's actually mechanically going on, and a certain amount of time has gone by. But actually, by intelligence, we know that much has gone by. But it's like, let us say we're sitting here, and you know, basically, other than global warming, nothing else is going on, right? So the 1 hour is going to go extremely slow. Right? And another time, maybe the class is interesting. So then the time goes very fast. Right? So the same hour, in one situation, seems like 3, in another situation, seems like 5 minutes. So that's actually how time works. Right? But here in the material world, because everybody's got to work and everything like that, you know, you have the element of death and all. Therefore, then this astronomical time comes in and then creates the past, present, and future, and it just slowly goes by, you know. But the spiritual doesn't work like that. It creates facility, as mentioned here. Everything is shaped and calculated in terms of the facility offered by time. Right? It means time offers one whole night of Brahma to the gopis to dance with Krishna. But they just took it as one night, and probably that they even thought was short. Right? But it's connected with the senses. Because even time we calculate by observation of the senses. Does that make sense? So, in other words, it offers facility. Here the facility is limited. Spiritual realm, it's unlimited. Is that okay? So, technically, there is no past, present, and future, because it's always been present. Sukadeva next describes his meditation in detail. He says that one who seriously desires liberation should concentrate his mind on the Virat form of the Lord, because nothing more than this exists within the material world. In language reminiscent of the Purusha Shukta hymn of the Rig Veda, he instructs Maharaj Parikit that the 14 planetary systems are situated upon the form of the Lord from his lotus feet to his head. His arms are Indra, king of the demigods. His mouth is his sacrificial fire. The Chanda, hymns of the Veda, are his cerebrum. The ocean of material existence is his glands. The root principle of matter is his consciousness. Rudra is his ego. His face is the Brahmanas. His arms the Kshatriyas. His thighs the Vaishyas. The soles of his feet the Shudras, etc. If one does not concentrate his mind upon the Virat Rup, one will be misled and will cause his own degradation. Yeah, so here he's pointing out more strongly that it's not that it's an option to use the universal form if there's material attachment. One has to. Otherwise, then one may be misled, misguided. You know, things will change. The standards will adjust. One's vision on things will be different than what is normal. Does that make sense? Like that. So, but at the same time, there's all these nice things here. His consciousness is the root principle of matter. So that means actually whatever is the item where it springs from is Krishna's consciousness. Right? In other words, he likes to see, hear, touch, taste, smell. He likes various shapes and forms and colors and textures and, you know, whatever goes with all those elements. Right? So he's the root of all that. So whatever it is in that you're looking for, it's actually coming from him. Does that make sense? Right? Any quality that you find in something, that's him. Does that make sense? Like that. Okay. Yeah. Why Purusha Shukta is mentioned? Because Purusha Shukta is about the original sacrifice. Gavodakshaya Vishnu enters the universe, and but he also comes with his associates. Right? This is before creation, so the Lord's never alone. So he has all his, you know, close associates. So because they have to create, but there's nothing in the universe other than the Lord to create with. So they perform a mental sacrifice. Right? They do a fire sacrifice, and there's a sacrifice made, like you sacrifice a horse at an ashramedha, or a cow at gomedha, like this. So the only thing they have is the Lord, like that. So then they take him over, and they start the yajna, and they take him over to the yup. Yup is, I don't know if you've ever seen, but it's kind of a wooden thing that looks like that on a post. And so that's so you put the animal's head through it, and then it can't get its head out. So then the animal can be sacrificed in that position. So they took the Lord over to the yup, and then in the process of taking him over, then the Lord expanded as everything. The sun and moon came from his eyes, the Brahmins from his head, the Kshatriyas from his arms, like this. So everything in the universe then expanded from him. But this is still the blueprint. This is the first creation. That's why he's saying he's the root of material existence, his consciousness, because he's expanded as all these elements. Then that is then given, those things are kept in the lotus flower of Brahma, and then with that, he uses that as the blueprint to create the gross manifestation. Does that make sense? Right. So that's why Purusha Shuktas will be referred to in creation, because then that's there. So when we're talking about their universal form in the creation, we're talking about basically is you refer whatever you see here back to the primary creation. Not that means what you're seeing is the secondary creation, and we're perceiving it with the senses. We have attachment to it, right? We have certain material ideas we feel we'll gain from it. But what is being said is that to understand this means if we just simply understand, okay, the ocean, the self, the water, and that is Krishna, then that's okay. But that's more for the materialists and the impersonalists. But what we're meaning is the potency of the ocean, its greatness, its power, its, you know, unfathomness, its unlimitedness, its mystique, its mystery. That's Krishna. Right? So in other words, whatever it is that's there in this gross manifestation that you see in front of you or can experience in front of you, that itself has its original subtle form in the primary creation. And that's the Lord. Right? That's not gross matter. That is the Lord, because there isn't anything else to create it with. Does that make sense? So you see something, but behind that is actually the Lord's potency that makes it what it is. I'm saying the knife is sharp, but that sharpness is Krishna. You know, the blade and the handle and all that, that's not, that's the knife. But a knife is known for its sharpness. We don't go, wow, great blunt knife here. You know, oh, nice jaggedy sawtooth blunt edges. Hey, great. You know, it's sharpness is what makes a knife. So the sharpness is Krishna. Right? But the form of it, that's the secondary creation, that's the gross matter. Does that make any difference? Is that more understandable how to use this? Right? So, in other words, anything that in its gross form is a necessity for you, know that its subtle form is actually Krishna. But we're mistaking it that the gross form is what is important to us. Does that make sense?
This isn't the love of Vrindavan, this isn't the primary creation, this is manifest separate from Krishna's eternal pastimes, or is it?
It's the material pastimes.
This is a material, even though it's just Krishna and not.
It's Krishna. The point is the potency are his potencies, as we were just. The potencies are his potencies. The potency doesn't have a one or the other. You know what I'm saying? His potency is his potency. It's spiritual. But the spiritual potency includes, it can be perceived as material.
But this is that blueprint. It's not the pastimes go on there within that lotus, within Brahma.
No, because that's just the material element.
Yes.
But it's not that Garbhodakshaya Vishnu is not there, you know, having a good time with his eternal associates that are separate from Kiradakshaya Vishnu sitting with his associates in Svetadvip, you know, in Dhruva Loka. Does that make sense? Like that. So it's that he has all the original demigods are there, but then you have the gross manifestation of the demigods we know as demigods, but worship Shiva as the destroyer. But the thing is the original Sadashiv is there, his eternal associate.
So is that highest point below?
Depends which one you're talking about.
means
the Lord in his pastimes with his devotees, his personal pastimes, or his having expanded into the elements, the primordial form of the universe.
Okay.
You understand? They're different. You know what I'm saying? It's just like the man is with his friends, but he cooks something. It's his potency that is there. It's his chefness that is able to produce the item. But the item itself is not him. But at the same time, its potency in it is non-different from him. Does that make sense? So, therefore, he has this pastime with his devotees at the same time as that expansion is different. It's simultaneously one and it's different. So, its oneness is that if you see it in relationship to the Lord, and that actually what I like about my bicycle is the Krishna element in it. It's actually that. You know, Krishna is able to, he's quicker than the quickest and whatever it is and whatever. So that's what's liked about it, or the aesthetic value of it, or the prestige of it, or the convenience of whatever it is, it's Krishna. Right? So that's different from the gross bicycle itself. But the gross bicycle is manifest off of the blueprint of that. Right? In other words, if Krishna's greatness, you have to have something great. So you have to have like Himalayas or ocean, or, otherwise it's not great. You wouldn't, get out of, this rock here and then, talk about Krishna's potency of greatness is here.
So the blueprint in the lotus.
The blueprint is kept there in the lotus. This is subtle. That's what I'm saying. Is so, if we connect to that, that can be connected to the Lord. We will engage the item with our senses in the Lord's service, but the consciousness is understanding the subtle connection. If it's not direct, if it's direct, you pick up a flower and offer it to the Lord, you don't have to worry about the metaphysical, things like that. You worry about that we're offering this flower to Krishna. But at the same time, is why we're offering it to Krishna is because we're offering him something nice. And so here in the form of nice smell, nice form, then you have a flower. But of course, ultimately that form and fragrance is Krishna. But if the principle is that of offering a lamp to the sun or offering Ganga water back into the Ganga. Does that make sense? Okay.
Mm. Well, Shikiana says if one does not concentrate his mind upon the Virat Rupa on the instead and cause some degradation, is he speaking to the people in general that don't necessarily have a personal relationship with Krishna? I mean, so that would be more like the masses of people that are trying to fit their material vision into something spiritual, that will remove Krishna, or
it includes, it's like this. If we wanted to remove the material consciousness, then that scripture would be for that purpose. So it's geared for then those who are not necessarily devotional, because that's why they're not taking it up, because they have to be convinced. Right? So that would be like Bhagavad Gita, Vedanta Sutra, Upanishads. But the Bhagavatam is for those who are convinced. So this is for us. Because when you say, because you're saying general mass, but at the same time it will lead them to Krishna. The general mass is not necessarily working towards Krishna. Right? So we would have to be referring to devotees, the massive devotees. So in here, the point is wherever it is important, you take it from there. In other words, if you have something that's connected directly to Krishna, you take it at that point. You don't take something lower. Right? In other words, you'll take the highest position of whatever position you're in, whatever is the option. So in here, the universal form, then you may take, okay, the children are devotees. Right? So then, in that case, you take care of them, interface with them, and all those things. And that's on a higher principle, right? Because they're devotees, I'm taking care, and we're trying to help them be Krishna conscious, and all that. So that works. And one doesn't really need to go in the universal form of that. It's just an aspect of association with devotees. And that works there. But then that, you know, when they smile, then that creates this reaction in you. And when they do this, it creates that anger in you. That's not, you're not dealing with the devotee there. You're dealing with this lump of flesh that you call your child. You know what I'm saying? So what is the potency in there that's functioning? Because it's dead matter. So what are you doing to connect that point? That's what I'm saying. Devotees will go, how is this Krishna conscious? My wife, we're making him Krishna conscious. Great. But the point is you're there because you're madly attached to your wife and children and your money and your position. That's why you're there. You're not there just because you just felt that, you know, you were doing some nice service for Krishna and these people kind of needed someone to take care of them, so you're kind of taking care. You know what I'm saying? You're there because of gross material attachment that's very deep, and if anybody gets in the way with it, then they're going to start seeing Methuselah with nice big sharp teeth and big nails. Yes or no? Yeah. So that's what I'm talking about here. Is depending upon where it is and how much the attachment, therefore you always take the highest. So if the highest is very high, you don't even bother with the lower. Sukadeva Goswami is not getting out, you know, Varnashram for dealing with the girls that he's running by when he's naked and they're naked. You know, just, you know, here's living entities that are, you know, like that, and they're servants of Krishna, and, you know, and I'm servants, and there's no particular service between us at the time, and he just keeps running. And I'm saying, but if there is something, then it's there. Vyasadeva, then he's making this distinction according to male and female. And so, and he doesn't come in and go, you know, deals roughly with those girls. He very nicely asks them, you know, I'm bewildered here. You know, you could say, well, he's Vyasadeva and here's just some girls, and, you know, he can just say, hey, you know, what's going on here? How come you covered? No, he'll go and say, excuse me, you know, can I ask a question? You know, why is it that, you know, my son goes by, he's 16 years old, he's naked, he's good looking. You know, you're young, you're good looking, and what's going on here? He just ran by and you didn't even bother covering up. I come along, an old guy, you know, funky beard, everything like that, and you're covering up. You know, it's kind of like, you know, what's happening? So, therefore, then, he's using all the etiquettes and everything that are necessary. So he's using the etiquettes of Varnashram to understand the spiritual principle. Does this make sense? So you use whatever actually is what works. Does that make sense? Yeah, no, he can. But the point is his question hasn't been asked. He didn't say, I'm dying in 7 days, what should I do? His question is, what is the duty of everyone at all times, and especially of one who's about to die? So he's made it just like Arjuna's questions. You know, like that. So that's why these conversations are so important, because you have qualified speakers, you have qualified hearers. So then he's giving, because this is the beginning, technically, of the Bhagavatam, you know, is spoken by Sukadeva. So he's starting out on what's going to be the grossest manifestation of ways to connect your attachments to Krishna. Because it said here before is that, you know, in this area is that the yogi meditates on the Lord. So how are you going to meditate on something where you're attached to, you know, a particular part of somebody's body? How are you going to do that? But the yogi does that. So how are you going to do that through the universal form? You know what I'm saying? You like someone's smile, like their nose, you like, you know, this about them or that, or you like their laugh, or you like, you know, whatever it is. So how do you connect that? That's the reality. This is the part that generally devotees avoid like the plague. And unfortunately, you know, the plague of attachment is taken over. You know what I'm saying? Means we call this a community. Take this community back to the 70s or early 80s. Do you even think Los Angeles would allow them to be here? In those days, Los Angeles was considered the most out-of-it community. You know what I'm saying? You don't know. I'm saying is what goes on in our community. Would you call what standards of Krishna consciousness would you say are there? What are the standards? Are there any particular standards?
Quite big boundaries.
Very big boundaries. That's my point. They're extremely big boundaries. A few group devotees here, then they have their standards. Someone else here has their standards, and this, but it's basically laissez-faire. You know? And basically, except for, I think, you know, one that everybody kind of like, kind of gets behind, at least at this point, because they nailed down as, oh, if somebody divorces somebody, okay, we can chuck them out of the community. Right? Does that make some sense? So, but it's not very, it's not a very established thing. What my point is that it's not necessarily progressive. It's not necessarily it's going somewhere. What's the plan? Where's it going? What's the standard? You know what I'm saying? If a girl covers up, she'll be harassed for being covered up. Right? Isn't it? So then, that's what I'm saying. Is, you know, even in the 80s, no one would have pulled that one. You know what I'm saying? Boys and girls pray freely in the park. A few people complain, but nobody says boo. That's my point. How is, so you can understand attachment is extremely rampant. So where's the Krishna consciousness? Where is, how is it being applied? Right? And because of that, it doesn't, you know, it makes things tough for everybody. And so if anybody tries to follow, then they're fanatics. You know, it's one thing if you're following and it doesn't work, there's another thing you're following that does work. Does that make sense? Therefore, the point is, when they're talking about this thing of the Virat Rup, is not far away. It's not for these, you know, people that are way out there in the ozone who are not devotees. No, this is right here today for the people sitting right here. That's my point. But he's presenting it from the angle of the jnani and the yogi, because generally they only take these things up. But the point is that the point is valid because we follow the path of Naishkarmya, which means Buddhi Yoga, which means Buddhi, intelligence. We're using intelligence to perform our activities. So where's the intelligence? How is it being applied? You know, things aren't supposed to be dry. Things that, no, we're saying, the point is we don't know how to do, but we don't want to know either. And the worst thing is we want to, you know, things go nicely for us and have a good time and all that, but only if you know what you're doing do you really have a good time. Right? You know, it's like you want to go on the roller coaster ride, great. And the guy down at the bottom says you got to keep, you know, the seatbelt latched. And it's, no, I do what I like. You know, why should I be told? So the other person goes to the full roller coaster ride and at the end gets off. The other person who has their own idea gets thrown off. And the best part is they never finish the ride. You know what I'm saying? So how are they going to get out of here? So the whole thing is that, let's say, if there's no restriction, you can put as much salt as you want in the preparation. Oh, wow, we have less sugar, but we've got a lot of salt. Okay, hey, let's put that in. Is that going to be good? No. So unless you restrict exactly how much salt you put, how much pepper you put, how much baking powder, how much water, how much ghee, it does not come out nice. No one here could convince me that it does. Right? So therefore, this whole thing of by following rules and restrictions, the result is so much greater than if you don't, is a concept totally foreign to the forms. You know what I'm saying? And in India, because they think foreign is great, they're starting to, you know, very, you know, to the best that they can, you know, do the things, you know, whatever they've learned from the soap operas, to, you know, that that's life. Does this make sense? So what we're saying is, if it's understood that properly applied restriction means improperly applied restriction, will also agree does not get you a proper result. But because people have improperly applied it, doesn't mean that the restriction is now useless or it doesn't work. No, it means the people who applied it didn't have the right understanding. Therefore, if it's perceived that there was something wrong, it's because they didn't know what they were doing. Because activity must be applied with knowledge. If you have activity applied with knowledge and the positive sentiment is there, that's even better. But if not, at least properly applied with, you know, in the proper way, in the proper mood, then that's good. It's progressive. It's a mode of goodness. Right? May not be so exciting, but it's pleasant. It's okay. And then if it has people have actually feeling towards it, then it's better. Does that make sense? So that's what is trying to be got across here, is that by regulating the life, that's how you'll progress. But how to apply that is very broad. In other words, just like we, you know, definition was given, the standards in the community are very broad. But the Shastra can accommodate that. And wherever someone's starting from, they can start from there and move forward. But the goal we're trying to get to, that's one. The methods used is one. The technique of applying it to different starting places, that's individual. Right? Does that make sense? Because everybody's attached in a different way. No one's attached in exactly the basic general principles are there. But what it is, that's different. Right? That's different. Therefore, the actual ability to apply the method has to be universally applicable. And that's done by understanding the principle on which it works. Because then you can see if this detail doesn't work, we try that detail. You just keep going until it works. Right? I go to cook. I put too much salt. I put less salt. Next time there's a good chance I'll put too less salt. Right? And then the next time I'll put a little bit more salt. And it may be, depending on how much I'm into pendulums or not, then I'll have oversalted it, but just oversalted. Or I'll have still undersalted it, but just very close. And then the next time I'll get it right. Does that make sense? Because you know what the standard is. So therefore, wherever I've started from, then I cut it back until I get it. You know? Does that make sense? So if you start out with a salt lick, then you can work back from there. But if it's only just, it was just like one grain over, then you start from there. Yes?
Is it as equally recommended to, like, the things that you see that attract you in this world, if you associate with that with Krishna's energy, or think, oh, that devotee's smile so sweetly. Imagine what Krishna's smile is like.
Any way it's connected, it doesn't matter. But I'm saying, try that when you're in bed. You know what I'm saying? I don't like to be gross, but sometimes we do that because the tendency is devotees will always try to, how do you say? There's a word for it? Where you just kind of like cover over the thing. Huh? Yeah, just like that. The grihasthas especially, everybody does it. The grihasthas especially will finesse their absolute gross attachment. And so sometimes, you know, I mean, it'd just be happier in this assembly if it were, if the age groups were different, then you'd be getting it right between the eyes. So, does that make sense? Is that the thing is if that's why I'm saying is you take the highest one you can. So if you take that one where you can directly see something connected to, directly to Krishna's name, form, qualities, and pastimes, that's much preferred. But there are areas where that may not be. You know, somebody's sitting there and running their fingers through your hair. What pastime are you going to fool that one into? You know, and they're telling you, you're beautiful, but you want to hear, you're beautiful because that's, you know, a reflection of some of Krishna's beauty and it's happened to come. No, you want to be beautiful yourself. So where are you going to connect that one? So therefore, you have to have those aspects of the Shastra that deal with that. That's the point. You know, we're just trying to, you know, we're trying the subtlest way possible to drive it home without being, at, you know, gross. But the point is because of stubbornness, therefore, is there, you know. And this is here, where it's a group of persons who basically like the approach we're taking. If we're in a more general audience, the egos involved are much greater. Much, much greater. Because generally, a grihastha always wants to feel I'm doing a great job. I have a few things here and there, but it's just a few points I got to work on. You know, they don't want to start from the principle of that brahmachari is 50% on the way back, already back to Godhead. Grihastha's got a 25% chance of making it. They don't want to avoid that one. So the whole point is that therefore we got 75%, you got to connect. Then you can make 100%. That was the statement of Prabhupada. Because the brahmachari is already liberated. He has nothing, he's got a few minor things to attachment to, you know, his dhoti and the color of his dhoti and his you know, cup and that and, you know, his particular spot where he hangs his gumsha or the particular shower or toilet he likes to use, you know, out of 10 toilets and showers. But, you know, it's not a whole lot that he's got to deal with. So if he can stay on that, he's already 50% liberated. If he can stay on that platform, very easy. The grihastha is he's working at his best. Unless he really knows what he's doing, it's only 25% because of his attachments are so much greater than, you know, you go to the temple how many hours a day? Right? And that how much we're thinking, you know, okay, Mangalarti, the japa, the darshan arti, class we may or may not, but we're connected. Take some prasad, and then we do our service. And that service may be connected with the temple, may not be connected with the temple. It may just be economics. So how many hours is that a day? 4:30 to 9. Right? 4.5 hours. So that means 19.5 hours that may or may not be connected. And the intensity of sitting there at Mangal Artik, and if it was a really great kirtan or something else, great. But how much more of an effect is it going to have on you, the child with a big smile and big happiness running up to you and hugging you, or a husband or wife being very affectionate before going somewhere, or you're going out, or something else. They've done something just the opposite that makes you so angry you don't want to talk to them. What are you going to think of all day? The outfit that the deities were wearing this morning? Or, you know, why did they say that? Who are they to say that? I'm working so hard. What would they mean by that? So therefore, Prabhupada says, said 25%. So that's not a problem. Because the point is if you're, whatever is the disease, you take that medicine. So if somebody's got a disease that he needs to take one medicine, you know, once a day, fine. Someone else has got a disease, he's got to take 10 medicines three times a day, fine. The point is if they both follow it, at the end of the regime of their, you know, treatment, they'll both be the same healthy. Right? The one's less healthy, he needs to take less medicine. The other one's more, he's taking more medicine. But the point is when we take he's only taking one medicine, so I only take one medicine. You know, I'm as good. We're all devotees. We're all the same. Great. Well, if you're all the same, then hey, let the brahmacharis move into your house. You know, let your wife be at the temple all day doing service and you never see her, you know. You know, or the husband's out all day doing service, you know. Or better yet, the husband's working with other ladies in his service. You understand? As soon as you bring these things up, you're met with very strong attachments. So there needs to be medicine for that. And therefore, then, this is one of the elements. Seeing somehow or another, connecting everything, either directly spiritually or through the metaphysical, or even with none of those, just the thing physically itself is engaged in the Lord's service. Does that make sense? So on the spiritual, metaphysical, or physical, in some way, make the endeavor to where your consciousness is at now, engage that, right?
Means you're not,
you don't think of everything at once. You know what I'm saying? If right now you're like you're totally into food, then you engage food and see it and contemplate it and that. If it's into your dress, then it's that. If it's your house, it's that. If it's a family, you know what I'm saying? It's not that, well, unless I'm doing it all at once, because you're not conscious of the other things. You know what I'm saying? So that's what you contemplate. If you didn't contemplate it at the time, then afterwards then you contemplate it. But in some way, start to connect it. Does that make some sense? Yeah. So that's the thing. The Bhagavatam's for us. It's not for someone else. Like that. It's written for... That's why it starts off. It kicks out all other things. But it will be presented through these very traditional Vedic methods. Because if someone wants to go to Vaikuntha or someone wants to go to Vrindavan, then they'll all understand the common ground. Does that make sense? So the Vedic cultural elements and that is a natural common ground because it's from the scriptures, it's from the Veda. Everyone accepts that. Then we have our particular view how we do that. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So the detail will change, but the principle is the same. In South, you want to talk to a superior, like the teacher, or the guru, or someone respected. You come up and you put your hand in front of your mouth. You don't just come up and start talking. You don't come up and go, "Hey, Prabhu, what's happening?" You know. You come up and you bend. You have this goes on the elbow. You put it in front of you, and you bend forward. You don't just stand it. You have to bend forward. You're taking the humble position. You know, you're not when you're speaking that nothing from your mouth will go on them or that. You're hiding the mouth because it's like that. And you say, is this something I can do? Like that. They're having a conversation, you don't use that. But when you're there to submit yourself and take orders, that's what you do. Right? So that's based on the principle of being humble and submissive before authority. As Gaudiyas, we don't use that one. Right? But we have no problem if somebody does. But if they don't use it, we don't have, as long as humility and submission is the method. Does that make sense? But to just come up and, "Hey, man, how's it going?" Well, then we're not going to think very highly of that. Okay, so we've kind of finished this one. We'll start with the 1.4 VT tomorrow. Oh no, Monday, excuse me. Grantarat Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai Nithai Gopudu Prabhupada. Hello, Mr. Balaram. How is Mr. Balaram? Very good, Mr. Balaram.